Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the President's address today to the annual AIPAC conference, where the members of the Israeli lobby were told the President has Israel's back and he won't hesitate to use force, although Obama warned there's been too much loose talk about a war with Iran. Professor of International Affairs at Harvard University, Stephen Walt, joins us. He's the co-author of The Israel Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy. Then we will speak with the Russian journalist Masha Gessen about today's election in Moscow of Vladimir Putin, which comes as no surprise. But what is surprising is how long it has taken the West to wake up to who this small-minded KGB thug is, and how in such a short time he has destroyed years of progress and has made Russia a threat to her own people and the world. Masha Gessen is the author of the new book, The Man Without a Face, The Unlikely Rise of Vladimir Putin. Then finally, we'll speak with one of the founding members of Occupy SEC, which is a working group within Occupy Wall Street of former finance professionals, lawyers, and concerned citizens who are lobbying the SEC for stronger regulations and oversight of federally backstopped banks and the prohibition of risky activities within them. Caitlin Klein, a former credit derivatives trader, joins us. Joining us now is Dr. Stephen Walt, a professor of international affairs at Harvard University. He is the author of The Origins of Alliances, which received the 1988 Edgar S. Furness National Security Book Award, Revolution and War, Taming American Power, The Global Response to U.S. Primacy, and The Israel Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy. He has an op-ed on AIPAC in tomorrow's Financial Times. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dr. Stephen Walt.
Nice to be with you, Ian.
And the President made this sort of mixed signals there today at AIPAC, where he did the sort of ritual solidarity with Israel speech, but also said there's been too much loose talk about war with Iran. But I think what was notable, though, was that he was preceded by Liz Cheney, who ripped into the administration for abandoning Israel, and former Congresswoman Jane Harman, who criticized the Obama administration for using Israel as a political football. So do you think that the President's remarks, even though they were met with a respectfully by AIPAC, they weren't met with a lot of enthusiasm?
I think that's fair to say. A polite reception, but not certainly rapturous enthusiasm. And one thing to remember is that AIPAC is a fairly hardline group. It's not representative of the views of the entire American Jewish community, probably not even doesn't even represent median opinion within the American Jewish community. So the fact that the Obama administration or the fact that the President didn't get a warm welcome reflects the fact that a lot of the people in that room weren't going to vote for him in the first place, and you know, not surprisingly, didn't hear quite as much red meat support as they might have liked.
So there's obviously been a lot of positioning and posturing prior to this meeting, and there's an expectation that Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister, who is in town and meeting with the President on Monday, is using AIPAC as a way to put pressure on the President. There's been all sorts of rumors of war, and the dogs of war have not been slipped loose yet. But there are a couple of scenarios. One is that Netanyahu could attack Iran during the election, drive up the price of oil, and leave Obama twisting in the wind. He's not given any assurances he won't do that. And on the other hand, it seems that the U.S. is offering assurances to Israel that if they sort of restrain themselves until after the elections, if the sanctions don't work, then Obama's prepared to use force. And of course, the U.S. actually has the force that would be applicable as opposed to Israel.
Yeah, there is a fundamental strategic gap now between the Israeli government and the U.S. government. And it's not just, you know, President Obama. It's also the American military leadership. I think that America's diplomatic corps, America's intelligence services, in this sense, it's not obviously just the president's decision. The U.S. government and the Israeli government see this one differently. They agree that Iran with nuclear weapons would not be a good thing, but they completely disagree about the situation that we're facing now and what the best course of action for dealing with it is. Prime Minister Netanyahu, to judge by his statements and other statements coming out of Israel, would like the United States to deal with Iran's nuclear facilities. And if the United States is not willing to do that militarily, then he would at least like a green light from the United States to do it himself, and perhaps a guarantee that we will come to their aid if Iran retaliates. The Obama administration, and especially the U.S. military leadership, see this one differently. They do not believe Iran has made a decision to seek nuclear weapons as opposed to a nuclear power and nuclear enrichment capability. And in fact, they worry that attacking Iran is one of the ways you would convince Iran's leaders that they had no choice but to go ahead and try and acquire a nuclear capability of their own as a deterrent. I think the American leadership also is worried about the geopolitical consequences of an attack, retaliation against Israel, retaliation against other American allies in the region, which Iran could do, perhaps not in devastating fashion, but in ways that would be uncomfortable, not to mention the impact of higher oil prices on a still fragile world economic recovery. Finally, the administration, and I think the U.S. government, believes that diplomacy has a chance of working here, that Iran is under tremendous pressure, and that we may eventually get a diplomatic deal that avoids the need for using force. So they don't want Israel to do anything, and they're not promising to do anything right now. What the president said in his speech was that he is prepared to take action if that's necessary to prevent a nuclear weapons capability, but we are some considerable distance from Iran having that capability, and they may not even be trying to get there.
You mentioned a bit ago, Dr. Stephen Walt, that that AIPAC is a hardline right-wing group that don't reflect the diversity of Jewish opinion in this country. And it would seem that in many ways, neither does Netanyahu in Israel, even though Israel has, as President Clinton has mentioned, has sort of moved inexorably to the right, largely through the emigration from Russia. Nevertheless, in a recent poll by Haaretz, the one in five Israelis support Netanyahu's unilateral action against Iran without American support. Israelis understand the importance of the alliance that they have with the United States, more so than apparently AIPAC does and Netanyahu does.
Well, I think in the case, certainly Israelis are more worried about what Iran may be doing than the United States does, just given proximity. But I think many Israelis do understand that, first of all, war has real risks for Israel, particularly if it further alienates the United States and Israel. But also, the Israeli defense forces do not have the capability to take out all of Iran's nuclear facilities. And it's important to note that in a sense, neither does the United States. The United States could do more damage if we were to go to war, but we can't stop Iran from pursuing a nuclear capability. We cannot destroy the knowledge that they have acquired for how to do this. So even if the United States or Israel were to attack and set back their program for some period of time, they could always reconstitute it. They can disperse it in more places, make it even less vulnerable in the future. So at best, war would only delay it. It would just make Iran hopping mad and also probably more resolved that maybe they would need actual weapons as opposed to just an enrichment capability. And I think some of that reality is reflected in the polls you were talking about.
But one of the realities that's not reflected, I think, is the intense partisanship in terms of foreign policy, which, you know, traditionally there's been always been this, I think, an illusion that we have a bipartisan foreign policy. Now, some of the people at AIPAC said that this is one of the, Lindsey Graham among them, said this is one of the few areas where we have bipartisanship on a need to do something about Iran. But the truth of the matter is that Netanyahu is much closer to the Republicans than he is to Obama, and he's shown some contempt towards Obama, as is the Republicans show contempt on a regular basis. Lindsey Graham and John McCain were recently in Israel undercutting the president. They pushed through the National Defense Authorization Act that put pressure on the president, and he threatened to veto it because it would effectively cause a rise in the price of gas, which is clearly a problem for Obama in an election year. How much do you think that partisan politics are going to play a role in this? And is there a possibility of a very cynical notion that the Republicans and Netanyahu together could do the only thing that could possibly derail President Obama's re-election.
Well, I don't think President Obama's re-election is a sure thing, regardless of what they do. But I think there's no question that partisan motives are deeply involved here. And the problem that the Republicans are facing now is that, in fact, they don't have very much to criticize President Obama on with respect to foreign policy. He got us out of a very unpopular war in Iraq. I believe he is trying to get us out of an unpopular commitment in Afghanistan. But at the same time, he got Osama bin Laden. He has been more successful and more assertive at waging war against al-Qaeda than President Bush was. The American economy has started to turn around. America's image around the world is much better than it was in 2008. And in fact, Obama has done a much better job of rounding up international pressure in the form of economic sanctions against Iran than President Bush ever did. So it's simply not, you know, there's not a lot of issues that you can try and point to on the foreign policy front if you're trying to attack the president. He's been, in some respects, as hardline as President Bush was, just a lot more effective at it. And therefore, they are, I think, somewhat desperately trying to make an issue out of Israel. Now, I would make one final point. I think President Obama has actually been a much better friend to Israel than President Bush ever was. And in a sense, the big difference between Netanyahu and Obama is where they think the existential threat to Israel really is. For Netanyahu, he keeps talking about Iran, but I think President Obama believes the real existential threat to Israel is the failure to resolve the Palestinian issue and the continued occupation, which threatens Israel's long-term legitimacy, threatens Israel's long-term political future in ways that Iran doesn't. And that's the real disagreement, although you're not hearing very much about that right now because the president doesn't really want to bring that issue to the fore in an election year.
And that's the last thing that that Netanyahu wants to talk about, because he doesn't have a policy. I mean,
He does have a policy. His policy is to treat the Palestinian issue as an issue simply to be managed until permanent Israeli control of the West Bank is an accomplished fact. I believe that's his objective. And therefore, you don't want a peace process that's going anywhere, or if you have one, you want it to be dragged out forever. This, I believe, is a very short-sighted policy that actually does threaten Israel's future much more than Iran ever could.
But just in closing, though, Stephen Walt, my suggestion is that if something were to happen, you know how the press is, that they'll just go hysterical about a war, and they'll even write theme songs as they did with the Iraq War, and the president would be in an incredibly difficult position. As much as Americans are weary of war, you know, when it becomes a big news story in the first few weeks, people lose their minds.
Yeah. Well, I don't think there is going to be an American war anytime soon, and certainly not between now and November. And I think I'd be inclined to say that the Israelis are not going to start a war in that period as well. And one difference between now and 2002 is in the 2002, 2003, in the run-up to the Iraq War, the administration then, the Bush administration, was actively seeking a war. They had decided they wanted to go to war against Iraq, and they were doing everything they could to push media and others to support that, and many parts of the media did. I think that's rather different now. I believe the Obama administration understands a war with Iran is not smart, not good for us, and not good for Israel or any of our other friends in the region, and therefore they're not going to be fueling those flames. And so far, I think media coverage has been much more straightforward, much more honest. They've obviously talked about the various people pushing for the war, but they've also provided the counter-arguments as well. So I'm hopeful, although not 100% sure, that we're not going to do something foolish this time around.
Well, I thank you for joining us here today, Dr. Stephen Walt.
Nice talking with you.
Again, Dr. Stephen Walt's a professor of international affairs at Harvard University. He's the author of The Israel Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy, and he has an op-ed on the APEC conference in tomorrow's Financial Times. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the small-minded KGB thug who rules Russia.
And it's so much less confusing when lines are drawn like that. When people are either consumers or revolutionaries, enemies or friends hanging on the politicians are the cogs in the system. It's just about knowing where everyone stands. All of a sudden, people start talking about guns, talking lies.